Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost.
Welcome to the Lifeboat Hour, September 21st, 2014. I'm your host, Carolyn Baker, and we're coming to you again tonight on a pre-recorded status. No more live shows on Sunday nights at Progressive Radio Network, which, as I mentioned last week, means that we can't take callers. However, I'm always eager to hear your comments or questions, and if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question during the week, you may do so on my Facebook page, or you may email me at carolyn@carolynbaker.net. Many of you know that the book Guy McPherson and I have completed, Extinction Dialogues, Living with Death in Mind, will be released later this month or in early October. It's going to be available in all forms, hard copy and ebook, and you can pre-order it by visiting the publisher's website. The publisher is Tayen Lane Press, and that's spelled T-A-Y-E-N-L-A-N-E, and the website is tayenlane.com. I checked the Amazon site this week, and it's not quite there yet, but you may order it also at your local bookstore. So keep your eyes peeled for our book. It'll be coming forth soon. Now, in the past on the Lifeboat Hour, we've talked many times about the reality of extinction and the fact that nearly 200 species a day are going extinct, that catastrophic climate change is daily increasing the likelihood of near-term human extinction, possibly as early as mid-century. We've also talked about how anything we can do for other species to make their lives and their deaths easier is part of what we must be doing at this time. And I personally believe that we have no right to be here if we're not doing this. Last month, I received a package of books and CDs from my friend Andrew Harvey, and among them was a book that has blown my socks off and which I couldn't put down. It immediately, you know, I just picked it up and I immediately devoured it, and I continue to return to it for guidance and inspiration. I'm talking about a book entitled Animal Wisdom, Learning from the Spiritual Lives of Animals. When I saw the title, I right away assumed that the author was an animal communicator and perhaps wasn't coming from a scientific perspective. And then I looked more closely and saw that the author, Linda Bender, is a DVM, a doctor of veterinary medicine, and I also saw an endorsement on the front cover by the renowned primatologist and anthropologist, Jane Goodall. One of the very succinct sentences in the book on page 82 leapt out and grabbed me beyond all others. It was this statement: our spiritual ecosystem is out of whack because there's too much human nature in it and not enough of other forms of nature. Now, we're going to talk about that in just a moment, but first I want to say that after reading the book, I immediately contacted Linda and asked her if she would be on the Lifeboat Hour, and she graciously consented to. Linda holds a Doctor of Veterinary Medicine degree and has been a lifelong animal advocate. She lived in Europe, Asia, Africa, and the Middle East, and her work has included rescue, rehabilitation, and protection of wildlife. Her interest in spirituality and healing led her to found Mind the Gap Wellness Center, as well as a pet therapy program. She's the founder of the nonprofit organization From the Heart, and she offers workshops and lectures worldwide on the relationship between humans, animals, and nature. Her website is lindabender.org. Welcome to the Lifeboat Hour, Linda.
Thank you very much, Carolyn.
So let's begin with when your connection with animals actually began. How old were you, and how did that connection happen?
Well, it's very interesting because I never thought about that exact question until not that long ago, and I was asked after a lecture by someone that very question, and I did not have an answer, Carolyn. I could not come up with a time before. But I thought about it and thought about it, and I really began to think early on, and a particular story, which actually is in the beginning of the book, as it turned out, about rescuing a little baby rabbit outside when I was a young girl growing up in New Jersey, and I heard this blood-curdling scream in the middle of the night. And we went out with our flashlights and found a tiny little bunny rabbit quivering all by itself, obviously having had a near-death experience with a larger animal. But it was alone, and I scooped this little thing up and brought it inside, and I said, I'm staying up all night, and I'm going to take care of this little bunny. And I remember distinctly holding that bunny, putting it up to my chest so the bunny could feel my breathing, hear and feel my heartbeat, and there was a connection. There was an immediate swirling beyond what it's really easy to describe of tremendous love and connection. And it's the first time I really felt that in that young life, and it's never left me. And that caring for that little creature turned around to an experience of caring and nurturing me and experiencing love for the first time, and I've never lost it since.
What a beautiful story. Yeah, that is in the beginning of the book, and I'm so glad you put it in there. Now, one of the nuts and bolts things that I want to ask you about before we get into the heart connection with animals that your book talks about is your work as a veterinarian. I don't have to tell you that veterinary care for animals these days is becoming prohibitively expensive, and that's why many people can't afford good or often any vet care for their pets.
Right.
Can you comment on the general state of veterinary care in this country, which I assume is similar to the status of human health care in this country?
Right. Well, you know, I think this is a very important point that you're bringing up because, you know, I come from a place, I'm science trained, I'm a veterinarian, I haven't practiced small animal practice for a while, but I do use clinics and my dear friends are vets. So, and then there's the wildlife side. So as far as our companion animals in this country, you know, just to remind people, in this country, we spend over $58 billion a year in the United States on our pets. I call them companion animals, but we can say the word pets. And because I was curious about this. And of that $58 billion, about $15 billion is spent on veterinary care per year. It's hard to imagine. And I thought a lot about this, and it's just not a simple answer. As in human medicine, veterinary medicine care has skyrocketed, but very, very much less so than human medicine. Fees actually have gone up less in veterinary care than in human care. But what makes it so expensive is the very basic question. For a small animal clinic, you know, it's a business like any other business, and obviously it needs to make money in order to function. Where we get into trouble is what we've done in medicine, be it human or veterinary, the cost of things like X-ray machines, ultrasound machines, these machines cost anywhere from like $30,000 to $90,000. Can you believe this?
Right.
You know, and there's all the other stuff that needs to be purchased to run a vet clinic, you know, dental equipment, testing, surgical, all of the above. And so what does this mean? It means that people are demanding higher quality service from veterinarians, but it's also tough when we can't afford. So, you know, these are some of the issues that go back and forth, and there's a lot of controversy about some of this. Actually, the average veterinarian graduates owing like $140,000, apparently, dollars in debt.
Right.
What are your thoughts about your practice as a veterinarian?
You had a small practice for a while, but now you're strictly an advocate. And I believe you said
right.
that some of your favorite people on the planet are veterinarians, and some of them aren't your favorite people. So do you care to say more?
Well, sure. You know, it's and again, as a veterinary practice, like any other practice, like any other business, like any other situation in life, you know, there are some that are a little more, shall we say, compassionate or, you know, community serving than others. This is, you know, I'm not going to deny that. You know, some people get caught up in the idea of the making of money. You know, when I was in school, I honestly, and in practice, money was not a motivating force for me becoming a veterinarian or really anyone I knew. It just wasn't part of the discussion. It was because we loved animals. And so again, you know, there's a healthy balance that we need to maintain. But I truly find, and I spend most of my time helping people who are in the trenches, don't have a lot of money, and there is a list. There's a list of vets who they know they can go to. They can get fabulous care for minimal amounts of money. My dear friend just actually last week stayed up 24 hours surgically saving the life of a dog who he wasn't going to get paid one red cent for.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it. And so there's everything going on, Carolyn, you know.
Yeah.
But the people I know and those who love animals, that is their life, that is their passion, and they are the people, my people, that I admire.
So why did you write the book Animal Wisdom, and what are its primary messages that you want humans to fully grasp?
Wow. Well, that question, do you have about 10 hours?
maybe 5 minutes.
Well, when I wrote the book Animal Wisdom, I tried very hard to put what I learned through a lifetime of connection to animals. And that began when I was a young girl, as we were saying. Began as a young girl, it was a connection from the heart and the soul. And it went through my years as a young person into practicing as a veterinarian, and I mean both companion animals and then also the many years I've spent out working with wildlife. And I tried to combine my three loves, and my three loves in life are love for animals, love for travel, and a lifelong spiritual seeking. But I was specifically in South Africa, and this was about 5 years ago, and I was visiting my friend Linda Tucker, and I took a day off. I was leaving the country the next day, and we were out in Kruger Park. And on the way out, it was getting near closing. We had had a fabulous day watching and viewing wildlife as they are meant to live. And as we were getting ready to head toward the gates, a huge herd of buffalo came across the road, covered the road, stopped, we stopped, they stopped. And I tell this story in the book, and all eyes were upon us. And it was one of those moments when I knew there was a message coming specifically for me. It was a deep connected knowing. It was an experience that's difficult to put into words. But I was told this: do not forget us. Do not forget us. Teach what you know.
Yeah.
And there was no one behind me. It was for me. And it was that point in my life when I realized that all the blessings, all the teachings, so much I had been given was not meant just for me. It was meant for me to teach, because no longer can animals live in blissful ignorance of humanity. And it was my job to raise my Dharma and teach as much as I can what I know.
And related to that, you actually say in your book that it's important for humans to understand that animals have individual souls and spiritual lives. And I've noticed that even if people do not believe in souls, or they have an aversion to the word spiritual, something about being in the presence of an animal seems to impact them. Can you say more about that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Carolyn, it's we don't need to be religious. We don't even need to be spiritual to understand and connect when we come into the presence of an animal, be it a cat, a dog, an animal in the wild, that there is a connection there. You know, as science has shown, we're all energy and information and vibration. And, you know, those animals pull us out of our egos. They pull us into a different place where we can relate without a lot of the superficiality of our culture. You know, we just zero right into the real deal.
Yeah.
And animals offer that, if we choose to listen and pay attention, to pull us into the authentic presence where we can connect with another being.
And related to that, you say in the book, what we do to animals, we do to ourselves. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, this. I've spent many, many years living overseas, working with animals. It's where I learned to be committed to conservation. But, you know, the bottom line is, the way we treat animals is how we treat ourselves.
Yes.
And there's two sides to that. You know, let's bring it home, okay, when we have our dogs and cats. When we take our dog out for a walk, not only are we exercising our dog, we're getting ourselves exercise, you know. When we rescue an animal and we bring it into our homes, that animal, in some sense, ends up rescuing us. I mean, this has happened to me more times than I could even, repeat here in this conversation.
Yes.
And also, you know, unfortunately, with what's going on in the world today, you know, when we destroy the habitats of animals and wildlife, we're destroying our own habitat, our own home.
Yeah.
I've spent many years, you know, studying the food animal industry, which is a whole other discussion. But when we eat the flesh of an animal that has been fed hormones, antibiotics, and its body is riddled with toxins from being abused, stress hormones, we're ingesting all of that into our own bodies. It cannot
yes.
be otherwise. That is the law of nature.
You know, there's a song that I have played on the show once before since I've been the host, and it had an enormous impact. And quite honestly, I've never been able to listen to this song without getting a lump in my throat. And so I want to ask that wherever you are right now, whatever you're doing, please sit down and open your heart to this song. Let it touch you. This is Wolf Eyes by Paul Winter. That was Wolf Eyes by Paul Winter, and this is the Lifeboat Hour. I'm your host, Carolyn Baker, and we're talking with veterinarian and animal advocate and activist Linda Bender. Linda, what's the best way that people can get in touch with you?
The best way to get in touch with me is lindabender.org, O-R-G, that's my website. And that has just about everything on there that's going on. I'm also on Facebook, and you can click on Facebook and Twitter through my website. It goes automatically. I have a fan page. It's Dr. Dr. Linda Bender Facebook. So there's a lot going on there, and I'd love people to like me and stay in touch that way, or Twitter.
Okay, very good. And as an animal advocate, what are you most passionate about right now?
Again, that's a difficult question, Carolyn, because
I never ask
when you're You never, well, that's good. That's good. You know, I never met a creature I didn't love and adore. People say, well, what's your favorite this or what's your favorite that? I love them all. Yeah. But they're actually, there are two things that I am particularly passionate about right now, and I'm working with them through a variety of ways, but through my nonprofit From the Heart, which incidentally some of the money from the proceeds from my book sale will go into From the Heart. And that money is used to give to people, organizations, and to teaching programs that I have personally written to help animals, their care, and their habitats. And most urgent is my wildlife interests in Africa right now, to help stop the poaching of elephants and rhinos, because, you know, about 100 years ago in Africa, there were millions of elephants roaming the continent, and today there are less than 200,000, and we're losing about 35,000 a year to poaching. So if you do the math, the time is critical. And I spent so many years in the trenches. I know the problems. I know who's doing good work. I know some of the things that need to be done. So I'm just tirelessly working to help animals. I'd also quickly like to mention, if anyone is passionate about elephants, on October 4th, there is a global march for elephants around the world and rhinos to stand up and march against the poaching. So, but right here in our own country, and often people are shocked to know this, that the number one cause of death in healthy dogs and cats under the age of 2 years is euthanasia. We have a huge overpopulation of our dogs and cats that in a country who loves and adores their companion animals so much. This just needs to be dealt with. And it is being dealt with, but we still have the problem. And so that's the other area I'm most passionate about now, and changing some of those laws. It's slow, but it's happening. So it really puts an end to the killing in the shelters. So it's slowly coming, but it's called the No-Kill Coalition, and people around the country are trying to get this as a goal.
Wonderful. And, you know, you mentioned a while ago your friend Linda Tucker in South Africa. Someday I'd really like to have Linda on this show, but I know that the technological connections between here and South Africa are often dicey. So I'd like you to tell us a bit about Linda Tucker's work and how it's influenced you.
Well, Linda is a woman I greatly admire, and she has dedicated her life. She was living a very, you know, fine life in France, but she also spent time in South Africa and also in Australia. But Linda is single-handedly, or with her partner Jason, they are trying to keep the white lions, the sacred white lions of Timbavati, from extinction. And Linda studied for many years with the great teachers of South Africa, Credo Mutwa, and many, many others. And she became so impassioned after her own transformative experience while in South Africa. And she realized that these sacred, what the Sangomas believe, are the star beings, they must be preserved. And she is now working with, she argues with the government, she's trying to change laws, she's trying to get the hunting camps stopped. She is a nonstop force for the preservation of the white lions, and Timbavati is the only place they've ever been found in the world. They are already extinct in the wild, but she has put together a preserve where she is breeding them in the wild, and they're semi-wild is what we would call, because they're, of course, having to be kept within boundaries. So she doesn't stop. It is her life, and she's making a huge difference.
Yeah, she's written a wonderful book. The title escapes me right now, but she's written this wonderful book on her work with the White Lions. And, I mean, right. This is a woman who, she reminds me so much in many ways of Jane Goodall, because she's given her entire life. And she's fought really, really hard as an activist for animals. And there's just no stopping her. She just, I bow to her.
Yes. You know, when you get that calling, it's not, you know, I say to people, this is not the work I do. It's who I am.
Yes.
And when you're doing the work that expresses who you are, your gifts, your treasures, you know, that fully awakened heart, you cannot do otherwise. And that's what Linda does, you know. That is exactly what Linda does. And there is no stopping. You know, and I keep a little note on my desk, and it says, the only way we fail is if we give up.
And yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, what are some things that we can all do to help animals and nature?
Well, Carolyn, in my book, Animal Wisdom, I have a chapter of things I put together, very simple, that everybody can do to help animals, because so often in my travels, I hear people say, oh, I love animals, I want to help, I try, but the problems are so overwhelming that I give up, or it's just too much. And I say, you know, you mustn't look at it that way, because every single thing we do every day, every decision we make, every choice we make has consequences. And what we need to figure out is what kind of a difference we want to make when we make our choices. So it starts as very simple things, and then it works its way up. You know, we can all help. And that's what actually does make a difference, because today, it does take a species. The problems are so overwhelming for animals that it takes all of us. And first of all, to be a voice for the voiceless, you know, and any injustice people see to animals anywhere, speak out, you know. And then simple things, some of those everyday things, making sure everybody's recycling, choosing packaged goods properly, you know. One thing I care very much about, it's hard for me to go to the beach, because every time I go to the beach, I find myself picking up litter all over the place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Litter
yeah.
can often end up around the necks of birds, you know, embedded in wings.
Right.
Plastic is huge, you know. Anything anybody can do to stop using plastic, bags and all this sort of thing, you know, it's not biodegradable. It's terrible for our environment. You know, the list goes on and on. Don't use pesticides. Teaching children to be in nature. You know, gardening, putting perennial gardens in for bees and butterflies instead of lawns. I could go on and on. You know, the list goes on. And listening to your heart and taking up a bigger cause, you know, if we're so called to do that.
Well, I want everyone to read this book, Animal Wisdom, Learning from the Spiritual Lives of Animals by Linda Bender, DVM. And in a moment, we're going to play another song. And this is a more modern version of Over the Rainbow. But I'd like you to tell us about how this song has influenced you when you were a child.
Oh, thank you, Carolyn. Well, it's very dear to my heart. When I was a young girl, my mother used to sing Over the Rainbow to me. And we would sit outside in the evenings, on wonderful summer evenings. We lived on a hill, and we'd look at the stars, and I used to think, oh, God, I wish I could go home. At the time, I didn't realize that home was probably somewhere a lot farther away than I understood. But I used to imagine that while that song was playing, that all the animals and all the beings on the planet were joyous and almost flying in the sky. And, you know, birds were hopping rides on horses, and we were flying, and we were just such in joyous expression of life. And these beings came to what I evolved for me as called Rainbow Bend, and I talk about it in the book, and it's a place where I find all my animal friends who've crossed over, who've been in pain, who've suffered. They're free in Rainbow Bend. Yes, it's a very sacred, sacred place.
And so here's Over the Rainbow by Brother Iz. Okay, that was Over the Rainbow by Brother Iz, and this is Carolyn Baker on the Lifeboat Hour, and we've been talking with Linda Bender, an animal advocate and author of Animal Wisdom, Learning from the Spiritual Lives of Animals. Please visit her website at lindabender.org, where you can learn all about her work and also contact her there. Linda, what's the most important message that you want to share today?
Yes, the most important thing that I really hope people think about is our home. Our home is so much bigger than our mailing address where we sleep at night. Mother Earth is our address, and we are brothers and sisters to all beings who share this gorgeous planet with us. And all life is intertwined, and how we treat animals and nature affects us. In the great reality, there are no divisions. There's no greater than or less than, no perfect or less perfect. All beings deserve respect and kindness and compassion, and we're their guardians. And I ask people, I have it in my book, and I'll say it now, I ask people to do something for animals, you know, and to help. Speak the voice in your heart, and don't be afraid to make a lot of noise.
You know, one of the things I want to mention that's in your book, and this just kind of grabbed my attention during the song, you know, as we talk about extinction, we're dealing with death, obviously, and you say on page 113 of the book, the central importance of death in nature is what makes us, at some level, hostile to nature. How can we love that which, to all appearances, is literally out to kill us? In a way, you could say that those who want to cut down the rainforest, live in glass towers, and pave over every last inch of the planet are acting in self-defense. Human assaults on the biological are our way of insisting that there is more to us than biology. If we can't achieve immortality, there is at least some pervasive satisfaction, some perverse satisfaction, I'm sorry, in erecting garbage heaps that won't biodegrade for the foreseeable millennia. I just love that statement. I think it just so captures what we've done to the planet and why. Can you say more?
Yeah. Well, you know, we're a culture of death deniers.
Yes.
You know, we do everything. We fight it. We deny it. You know, we it's something we don't want to think about. But death is an expression of life, you know, and then life is the expression of source. But, you know, we have real trouble with this concept. And I'm reminded of St. Francis, and who loved the animals, who loved nature, and considered the, you know, the stars, the sun, the moon, the animals, all sisters and brothers. But St. Francis also, in one of his I believe it was the Canticle of the Sun, called death, sister death. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he also says in the peace prayer that it is in dying that we are born to eternal life.
Yes.
So dying is so much a part of living, and it cannot be otherwise, you know. Mm. But eternal life does not necessarily begin after life. It's now. And,
absolutely.
And now, you know, now is when we should begin to deal with the, death.
And, you know, one of the most powerful experiences that I've ever had is when I've had to, and my heart has been broken to pieces. I've had to put down, you know, some of my animals. And, you know, a powerful healing experience was to do that in a vet's office who would allow me to lie down and hold the animal in my arms. I didn't want to do it, you know, standing by a cold table. And to have that experience of the animal's life slipping away in my arms. And then, you know, I have this altar in my house that has all of their ashes and all of their pictures. It's just been such a profound experience for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And animals, particularly our companion animals, have so much to share with us about dying. And, you know, I think when we embrace dying finally as part of life, and so many people, I mean, it's our nature. We put it off until we can't put it off anymore, and it's in our face. But, you know, little things we do every day, we can practice dying, letting go. You know, fear of dying is really a fear of control, letting, you know, losing control.
Yeah.
But what animals can help teach us is that when you lighten up and you lose a little of that fear of dying, you're also not so afraid of living.
I love it. I love it. Say,
you know,
more about that, would you please?
Well, there's such a freedom in that, you know, and I also find it in people, I hope I'm including myself in this, of when we really live a life that's authentic and of higher purpose, we let go a lot of the fears that of control, and we just, you know, walk face forward into fear, into all of the above, and it's there's a freedom in it. It's I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm alive. I'm conscious. I'm living a sacred life, and come what may. You know, it's a freeing, joyous experience, and St. Francis talked so much about that in his writing. It brings a great peace and joy.
Yeah, he's one of my all-time heroes. I really love Francis, and I never tire of reading him and gaining inspiration from him. So please tell us what you're doing right now and how to follow you. I know that you've done that a bit, but tell us a little bit more about what you're doing.
Okay, well, if you go to my website, lindabender.org, you can learn about one of the things I'm doing, which is, and we didn't talk too much about it, but, you know, there's such compelling research out there that we connect, minds connect beyond this dimension, and that's that intuitive psychic realm that, you know, I've experienced my whole life, and now there's documented evidence of it, and people are having these experiences all the time with their animals. What I'm doing, inspired by Rupert Sheldrake, is we're putting together a database of what I call unexplained powers of animals. So I'm asking people to send me their stories, stories of great intuitive connections. You know, your dog knows when you're coming home. Certain things happen. There was no way you can explain it. All these fascinating stories. And send them in, and we're compiling a database because, you know, it's mainstream science says that these things are all, you know, paranormal. Well, in my experience, and also Rupert's and others, science people are saying, no, it's really very normal. And so what we believe is paranormal is not to have intuitive connections. So we're putting this together, and so people can come out of the closet a bit more about these wonderful intuitive encounters.
Very good.
And I'm doing
that. And so people can find you at your website,
yes.
lindabender.org,
yes.
And they can send these stories. They can contact you there. They can also follow you on Facebook, correct?
Yes. Yes, and I'll be teaching. I think I have, I'm getting already booked into next year, but I'm teaching and giving workshops around the world on that sacred relationship between humans and animals, and I'm putting together a course to help people who are a bit burned out, you know, the activists and the advocates. So there's a lot going on, and I hope everyone reads the book and enjoys the book, because I think it will be a very, very wonderful way to help people open and figure out their journey.
That is the book, Animal Wisdom, Learning from the Spiritual Lives of Animals. Please visit Linda at her website, lindabender.org. And Linda, thank you so much for being on the Lifeboat Hour.
It's my pleasure.
Everybody got this broken feeling. Like the father or the dog just died. Everybody talking to their pumpkins. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rose. Everybody knows.